You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, June 9th, 2016.
I believe the figures are out of 96 officers. We have 10 women, 4 African-American officers, and 2 Asian officers. Is that where we want to be? Not yet.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton takes questions about diversity and affordable housing later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about public safety in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
Mayor John Hamilton announced improvements in parking meter performance in a press conference this afternoon. Purchased at roughly $1.9 million, almost every one of the 1,500 meters has experienced some kind of failure since installation. The city still owes nearly $740,000 on the meters. Hamilton said the city's technology services department has documented a monthly failure rate of 18% since they were installed. Hamilton cited a long list of problems with the meters, including frozen keypads, inoperable credit card readers, coins getting stuck, no backlighting at night, main batteries dying, and some other issues. The city returned all 1,500 meters to San Diego-based IPS Group for review and repair in the fall of 2015. After repair and reinstallation, the meter's failure rate was down to 5% as of February. Hamilton said IPS Group has continued to work with the city to improve that rate, which is currently holding at 2.6%. An agreement has been reached in which IPS will replace meter housings, provide city staff with preventative maintenance training, and extend the meter's warranty through May of 2017. The agreement also guarantees the monthly failure rate will be no higher than 2%. Hamilton said the city is retaining $45,000 in damages for staff time and other costs. Hamilton closed by saying, quote, "Despite problems with the meters overall, the revenue the meters generated has covered all costs associated with them."
Last night, the Bloomington Utilities Department made its case for a 22% water and sewer rate increase. Utilities Department Director Vic Kelson told the Bloomington City Council, "It's important to note CBU is funded exclusively by its customers and receives no tax income." John Skump with the Indianapolis-based consulting firm Crow Horwath said the department's budget is tight and that if the city sticks with its current rates, it will be more than $3 million short on funding badly needed capital improvements. The city last increased rates by 41% in 2012. Kelson said those monies funded an expansion of the Lake Monroe Water Treatment Plant and refurbishments at the Dillman Road Plant. Kelson outlines his current priorities for the waterworks.
On the waterworks side, we're going to be working on 3 primary initiatives. One is improving water quality. Another is infrastructure replacement and rehabilitation. And then the addition of new smart technology to our entire operation.
Specifically, the utilities department will be working to reduce disinfectant byproducts and develop a source water protection program. Kelson also said the incidence of water main breaks is high, and he emphasized the importance of replacing old infrastructure.
We're also embarking on a water main replacement program with the goal of replacing all of the pipes that are more than 75 years old in the next 20 years. We have 80 miles of pipe that's over 75 years old in the city of Bloomington. That's about 1/5 of our inventory. So it is a significant long-term effort, and it will have to be funded each year.
Kelson said replacing aging infrastructure is also important for the sewer works. Preventing overflows and upgrading the Dillman Road and Blucher Pool wastewater treatment facilities are also priorities. Councilmember Isabel Piedmont-Smith asked Assistant Director for Engineering Mike Bengston how the Utilities Department plans to mediate sanitary sewer overflows in the Grimes Lane vicinity.
The relief sewer we're talking about would be a parallel sewer. The original interceptor sewer is lacking in capacity, so the relief sewer would be a parallel sewer of a designed size that would alleviate that lack of capacity.
And that's the $6.5 million project?
Yes.
And that relief sewer would run through what the area slated for Switchyard Park?
Yes, and like I stated earlier, our designer is working with the designer of the park so that we're not running through an area that they have prescribed for another purpose. We would try to seek a path that's in harmony with their design.
Kelson also said the city would consider increasing the funding for the Customer Bill Assistance Program. Councilmember Susan Sandberg asked Finance Director Efrat Pfefferman how financially challenged citizens could access the program.
My recommendation would be to contact our customer service department. That particular program is income-based, and so they can help a customer identify the best route to take. It may be that program. It may be another referral in the community. Our township trustees have some programs. Some other agencies and religious organizations do too, and we're well-connected. We make referrals to them. We also work with customers to set up payment plans. My motto is we err on the side of compassion. So, if you're struggling, if it's a unique situation, call us and talk to us, and we'll work through it with you and help you find the right path forward.
Scomp, the representative from the consultant Crow Horwath, said customers will likely see only about a 20% increase in their bill.
Smaller or your average user is going to see about a little over 20% increase in their combined bill since stormwater is not going up. To the extent you have larger users, they're going to see closer to that 22%. You really won't see it be any more than 22%.
The majority of the council voiced its support for the increase, with the exception of Council Member Steve Volan, who was not satisfied with Kelson's explanation of how the rate increase was calculated. The council will vote on the increase at its June 15th meeting. The Indiana Utilities Regulatory Commission must approve the increase before it can go into effect.
A 19-year-old Monroe County jail inmate suffered a ruptured aortic aneurysm on Tuesday. That's according to a recent autopsy report from the Monroe County Coroner's Office. According to the Herald Times, Clinton Gilkey IV collapsed in the shower area in the recovery dorm of the jail. A preliminary autopsy report shows there was no evidence of foul play, and an investigation shows that Gilkey had pre-existing medical conditions. Gilkey was pronounced dead after an ambulance took him to the IU Health Bloomington Hospital. Gilkey was living in the recovery dormitory as a part of the New Leaf New Life program. Jail staff report that Gilkey had no disciplinary or misconduct issues while he was at the correctional center. Gilkey was arrested in September of 2014 as a juvenile for armed robbery.
In a news release, the Indiana State Police announced that as of July 1st, motorists will again be required to move their vehicles off the highway after an accident if the car comes to rest on the traveling portion of the road. This law applies to all government-maintained roadways. The reinstated law's intent is to safely remove traffic hazards to reduce secondary crashes. It also guarantees statutory backing for motorists who clear their cars from the road. 22% of all crashes are categorized as secondary, meaning they result from other accidents. And for every minute the primary accident is not cleared, the chances of a secondary crash increase by 2.8%, causing 18% of freeway deaths.
The Department of Natural Resources wants the public to know they have a new app called NDNR Trail Finder that allows users to explore more than 3,600 miles of Indiana's public hiking, biking, mountain biking, horseback riding, and motorized recreational trails. This includes federal, state, local, and nonprofit trails. The site features an interactive map and can be searched by trail name, location, trail activity, or surface type. Once users click on a trail, a pop-up box will provide information on mileage, surface type, and managing agency. The app can be found online at the DNR's website.
The Hoosier National Forest has implemented several improvements to both the German Ridge Campground and the Saddle Lake Campground in southern Indiana over the years, but new repairs are needed. Camping fees are currently $4 at German Ridge and free at Saddle Lake. Due to rising costs and recreation budget declines, the Forest Service would like to implement fee hikes to $8 and $5 respectively. All new fee proposals will be presented before a Citizens Advisory Committee. The meeting time and location are still to be announced. In the meantime, the Forest Service would like to hear from the public about their plans to increase charges at German Ridge and begin charging a fee at Saddle Lake. More information may be found at the Hoosier National Forest website at fs.usda.gov/Hoosier or by calling Nancy Myers at 812-547-9241. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Just more than 5 months into his first term, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton dropped by the WFHB studios this week to talk with the hosts of our African American Public Affairs show, Bring It On. Hamilton took questions about the high cost of housing in Bloomington and about diversity issues in schools, police forces, and elsewhere. We bring you a portion of their conversation now for today's WFHB Community Report. The show was hosted by William Hosea and Cornelius Wright.
So Mayor Hamilton, I went back and reviewed your speech, your acceptance speech, and there are several issues here that you talked about. But the one thing that keeps coming back, and I even asked a couple of people I know, you know, is there anything you might want me to say to the mayor tonight? Affordable housing just kept coming up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did about, I don't know, like 70 house parties last year in the campaign, and affordable housing comes up at almost every opportunity when people think about what's going on in Bloomington. And on the one hand, the fact that we have a problem with affordable housing means we got a really strong housing market. We got people willing to pay a lot of money to live here, and that's good. Because if you have a weak housing market, it's harder to get solutions. But what it also has meant that without a strategy, if you have a housing market and you don't have an affordable housing strategy, you just keep reducing the ability of people of other means to live here. And I think that's been a big issue in Bloomington. We just haven't had a strategy. We've had a housing authority that's got the federal kind of world, and we've gotten some money through the city government, traditional federal money, but we haven't had a local strategy. So that's what I've been working on. I'm happy to talk about some of the stuff we're trying to do with
that. I know growing up in Berkeley, which is also a college community, and years ago there were some of the same problems with the escalating prices, and I know they came up with some forms of rent control. Is that one of the things that have been tossed around as you've tried to, you know, deal with this problem?
Yeah, I think, you know, affordable housing, you got issues in rental and ownership. They're two different kinds of markets. Bloomington is about two-thirds rental for our residents and one-third homeowner, so rental's the bigger part. I think looking at how you protect affordable rents over the long haul is a really key issue. And I'm actually, right now, we're working with some different potential housing developers, people who want to invest money to create market housing, to say, how can we, at the same time we're creating new investments for market housing, how can we support affordable housing, including cash support? If you're doing a big new investment, you can put cash money in to support affordable housing, or what we call often is called inclusionary zoning, where if you're going to build, let's say, 100 units of market rate housing, you also have to build 15 or 20 or 12 units of affordable housing. Rent control is also something to look at. We haven't done that in Bloomington before, but we haven't done a lot of these things before. You know, we had a lot of housing built over the last decade, and we didn't really get anything to support affordability out of it. And my view is, if you have private investment coming in for market rate housing, you should steer some of that value into affordable housing too. And when I say affordable, I really mean housing that's affordable from the poorest of the poor up to working families who are even above median, but they still have trouble finding housing. Yeah. You know, it's not just low income, it's a whole range of housing options.
So what is it that specifically makes Bloomington, causes Bloomington to have the highest fair market rental in the state of Indiana?
I think it's called Indiana University. Uh-huh. I mean, I really think it's the large number of people who are here who, you know, the university only houses about, give or take, one-third of their students on campus, a little less maybe. And so those two-thirds of folks, they got to be somewhere, and a lot of them are willing to pay a fairly high price for it. So the development community has met that need. They'll build, you know, expensive places for that.
You know, here on Bring It On, we deal with issues that are prevalent to the African-American community. And would you share with us the state of diversity in Bloomington now, where we are today, the good, the bad, and where you would like to see us in several years?
Several ways. In many ways, our community as a whole demonstrates that a commitment to and a celebration of diversity is key to our DNA and who we are. Now, that doesn't mean everybody behaves that way, because they certainly don't. And we got examples of that, too, since I've been mayor. But if you look back on the history of the community over the last number of years, the instances when the community has stood up strong to support the importance of a community that welcomes everybody and works for everybody, whether it's the immigrant community or Muslim community, whether it's African-American community, whether it's LGBTQ community, you know, we've been a voice about that. Somebody called us a blueberry floating in a tomato soup bowl. We still have significant economic and some racial segregation in housing patterns. We have a lot of segregation in housing, income segregation of housing patterns. We have challenges on our public safety forces. You know, we can talk about that, but we don't quite have the diversity I want in the police force and the fire department force, and so we got work to do.
And that was something that I was going to bring up, the police force, the fire department, as well as schools. And I know that's a tough problem. How do we recruit more minorities to Bloomington? And I know that's been a question that's been asked for the 20-some-odd years since I've lived here, so there's no quick fix, obviously, but what type of things are you trying to do to make that happen?
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, there's kind of two really different answers. One of the answers is, in my view, people of all kinds want the same things for their families, which is a high quality of life, and they want jobs, and they want good schools, and they want affordable housing and a high quality of life. And so unless we have that, we're not going to be attractive to anybody. And if we do have that, I hope we're attractive to everybody if we're a welcoming community. But there's no doubt also that we need to recruit and talk about the values of our community as welcoming people of all backgrounds and all races and all beliefs. For example, on the police force, we have 96 sworn officers right now. We're actually approved up to 100, but it's hard to hire police now. It's a tough environment around the country to recruit. People are not signing up to say, I want to be a police officer, as much as they were 30 years ago. There's a lot of reasons for that. We right now in the Bloomington Police Department, you know, continue to recruit. We have, I believe the figures are out of 96 officers. We have 10 women. We have 4 African-American officers and 2 Asian officers. You know, is that where we want to be? Not yet, but it's better than we were 20 years ago, I think.
That was Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton speaking with two hosts of WFHB's Bring It On, William Hosea and Cornelius Wright. You can hear their entire conversation at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, funding 911 and the police, Monroe County's public safety tax. Monroe County is considering a new tax to pay for public safety needs. The tax, which is available under a law passed recently by state legislators, would add 0.25% to current income taxes. All of the funds raised would go to public safety entities, and for taxpayers, the increase is estimated to cost $125 per year for a person making $50,000. The main beneficiary of the proposed tax increase would be the county's 911 dispatch center, which would receive 30% of the approximately $6.9 million raised. With all the talk about public safety, Voices in the Street asked your friends and neighbors how they think Bloomington ranks as a safe community.
Well, it depends on what area it hits on, I guess. You know, most taxes are, you know, implicated for a good reason, but as long as it doesn't take from one organization that we really need, it's okay, I guess. But as long as it's not harming anybody, that would be my question, you know.
I think it bothers me and a lot of, like, young women that there's, like, a lot of homeless people around.
Okay.
And, like, they definitely, like come up to girls, like, and confront them. And it kind of makes you feel uncomfortable. I never, like, walk home alone because it's just kind of, like, scary. And I, like, definitely don't feel safe all the time. And, like, I've, like, seen, like, drug deals happen, like, in, like, plain sight outside. And, like, the whole area, like, across from Kilroy's, like, People's Park is, like, very, very, very crowded with people of, like, just... And I'm not saying that, like, everyone who's in that situation is, like, dangerous, but a good amount of them definitely verbally harass people. This is, like, a college town, so it's, like, the policemen should be, like, looking out for, like, the safety of, like, the students at the school, I think, rather than, like... I don't know. I don't really know, like, why Bloomington has such a big homeless population, but it's, like, it's just, like, I think if I was a parent and I was, like, going through a tour of IU, I wouldn't let my, like, son or daughter come here.
Because
it's just, like, it's, like, kind of scary. It's, like, not, and you don't see it even in, like, Chicago or, like, Indy or anywhere. You know, it's just kind of an interesting.
Relatively safe, yeah, I guess.
I feel safe here, and I don't really feel the need to have more police. Okay. I know other people have talked about on campus, they feel like there's not enough police, but I don't really share that same sentiment, I guess. I mean, obviously it's not ideal when I'm walking home at night by myself, and I do get scared sometimes, but compared to other cities of our size, I feel like we're doing pretty good.
I do feel Bloomington is a very safe environment, but I do feel like there are a lot of things that are said that don't get a lot of the publicity due to us do, you know, us having a big school and being IU. So there are a lot of things I think they do keep under the radar that they should, you know, definitely help make the city better. But overall, as a whole, I do think, yeah, it's pretty safe. More or less, not as many officers. I don't think it's the officers that are doing anything, but I think that citizens alone need to do more or less than just to blame it all on officers needing to do anything. It needs to be more in the people of the town to actually care and do things. Yeah, everyone needs to step up, not necessarily just officers.
I've always felt pretty safe. yeah, I can't even remember an incident in which...
That affected us.
Yeah, correctly. That affected us.
It's always good to keep maintained. I mean, to keep the safety maintained, though, so... I would say, I mean, if the population keeps increasing, then we need to definitely stay on top of keeping it funded and keeping it increasing with the population.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton and Casey Ross, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was edited by Joe Crawford.
Voices in the Street was produced by Kelly Worley. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. For WFHB, this is Joe Crawford.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.